Welcome to Hashtag Black. This is our podcast where we hash out the hashtags that frame Black life. My name is Stephanie Shanakan, and I teach at the University of Missouri. I teach in Black Studies and Music, and I'm really interested in how music and culture intersect and how we can think about ourselves, our world, through the lens of music. But, you know, in my Black Studies classes, we engage in topics and in current affairs in a way that is really, really vibrant and lively. And often those conversations overflow the class setting. We continue talking about this on these topics on social media, and we just thought that it was time to take those conversations to a podcast. So this podcast is specifically designed to bring my students, this generation into these conversations that regard the hashtags that have to do with Black life, whether it's in the United States or elsewhere. So each time we have this podcast, we will have I will have a group of panelists. Most of them will be regular, and we'll invite some guests in. And again, they are all these wonderful students that I've encountered here at the University of Missouri over a period of time. So today with me, three of my favorites, Deontay Boyd.
Hello.
Hello, Deontay.
Hey.
Deja Mackey.
Hello. And put my radio voice on.
Yes, there you go. And of course, Kennedy Moore.
Hey.
You guys want to just share what your majors are real quick?
Hello, my name is Deontay Christopher Boyd. I am actually a recent graduate of the University of Missouri. I double majored in psychology and Black studies with a multicultural certificate.
Okay, Deja.
I am Deja Mackey, and I am a senior at the University of Missouri, majoring in Black Studies and Women's and Gender Studies.
And Kennedy.
And I'm Kennedy Moore. I am a senior here at the university, double majoring in Communication and Black Studies.
Lovely. And again, I'm Stephanie Shanakan. I teach in Black Studies and the School of Music, and I'm chair of the Department of Black Studies. But on this podcast, we are all engaging, we're coming in from our different perspectives, and we're arriving at a point, I think, where we can really flesh out some of these conversations. So we invite our listeners to listen to our podcast, follow us on Twitter at hashtag Black. I will get that figured out. and what we will do each time is just spend some time on some of the major hashtags that have been trending lately. So I'll always bring in about four or five hashtags that have been trending. And then I'm going to go around and ask you all to weigh in on some hashtags that you've been focusing on, particularly based on your own interests, okay? And we'll talk about them. So this week, I want to talk about, I want to start with hashtag Charlottesville. That's a big one that has been trending. It definitely has a lot to do with us as Black people. So, Deontay, hashtag Charlottesville. What do you have to say about that?
Hashtag Charlottesville. So, let me just say, like, when the different videos and just the different current events come up on social media and it has anything to do racist or racism-wise, mm-hmm. It's kind of hard for me to watch. You know, I'll watch the video, but I'm going to be honest. I find myself scrolling past it. Like, I get, like, the meat of it, but I'll keep going because we've been doing this for years now. Mm-hmm. You know, in the beginning, like, I was all into, like, the Trayvon Martin and, mm-hmm. and the different shootings. Like, you know, like, when it really was heavy, about 2014, you know? Like, when everything was publicized, I was fresh in college, so it was easy for me to, like, really intrigue. Now it's just kind of, like, draining. Mm-hmm. And so I didn't necessarily look all the way into it, but, of course, I had to read it, and I just found it really baffling.
Mm-hmm. Really baffling. In 2017, yeah.
In 2017, right? Yeah. Marching with torches. Torches.
Tiki lamps, but that's okay.
Yeah. Tiki lamps, you know, look.
Same thing.
But I was just like, wow, yeah. What if they were all Black? What if they were all black
Very
marching?
Very interesting point to raise,
these tiki torches.
That's a great question.
They wouldn't have gotten 2 feet down, down the sidewalk.
Mm-hmm. And they, if I'm not mistaken, they did something like this like throughout the downtown city and then like in on the campus there too, right? Mm-hmm. So this is twice, maybe more times that they've done it. And I just feel like the repercussions for those people, if they were black, instantly, like we would have been shut down. We would have been hurt, you know, we would have been bruised and battered. Mm-hmm. And I just found that interesting. But the funniest thing I heard or saw was on Twitter. And it was like the guy at Home Depot that sold them the tiki torches.
Oh, yeah.
Is at home like that.
I saw that.
Man.
Wow, context is everything. Mm-hmm. You know, it's all about who's holding it and what does that mean. Deja.
So two things. The first one that I found most interesting was, well, I did a little bit of searching on Twitter. I didn't want to get, like Deontay said, it is very draining. I didn't want to get too deep into Twitter. And especially like, because it's different. We have this sect of Twitter that's black Twitter, which, you know, when I log onto my Twitter page, that's all that I see. But then, of course, you have some people within the black Twitter sphere retweeting like racist sentiments from other people. Mm-hmm. So you get a little bit of like... Mm-hmm. Other Twitter spheres, racist Twitter spheres, I don't know what, you know, if they have a name or whatever, but something that I found interesting was people, it was a tweet, I should have brought it up, but it was talking about like the women who have involvement in these marches. So the women that are involved in these marches. Mm-hmm. So they were, if you look in the pictures, there are a couple of pictures that everyone is retweeting, like with their mouths wide open and like making funny memes out of them. But if you look closely, you can see that there are women positioned. They're not at the front lines, which I think is very telling of like, you know, patriarchy and gender in America, but they're within the marches. They're not, women are not excluded. This is not just white men. And then, you know, I started doing some searching and I, you know, you start getting into pages and pages and you start, you know, backspacing. And I found this article about women within the KKK. And I found this picture of this woman in full KKK regalia breastfeeding her baby. Mm-hmm. And then you start to think about like the role that white women have had and still have in this. So you think about like these men. If they're heterosexual, who are they going home to? Are they in relationships with women? Are they, I saw it was a tweet that was like, well, let's talk about the women who are running these men's bath water and have, you know, dinner ready for them on the table when they go home. Yeah. So just, I laughed at that one though. It was funny. But yeah, just like, what are white women's roles and involvements within these marches and within these conversations? Because there were, just like how there were the like the white knights of the Ku Klux Klan, there were specifically women's mm-hmm. Ku Klux Klan groups mm-hmm. that only women went to. Right. So I thought that was interesting. And then another point, I saw tweets from Ellen DeGeneres where she was saying, 2017, like, is this really our America? I can't believe this. And a bunch of people in black Twitter were retweeting saying, Ellen, girl, this it's has been our America the whole mm-hmm. time. Where have you been? Mm-hmm. Like, you've been living in a very different America, a very different headspace than we have been. Because, you know, this wasn't, of course, it's always going to be shocking. Like you said, it's going to mm-hmm. be something that's draining just because of the violence and like how bold these people are being. Because, you know, there's racism, but like they were bold with it, you know, mm-hmm. like they were right in your face. Mm-hmm. But again, this is something, especially students at Mizzou, we experience on the daily.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Love that you bring up the point about the white woman, because in all the pictures where people are foregrounded in that march, they're all men. But you're absolutely right. We should be thinking more broadly. And it reminds me, of course, of the 1950s and 40s, if you remember when, I'm sure we've talked about this in class, when the Daughters of the American Revolution refused to let Marian Anderson sing at the hall in Washington, D.C. And so she ended up singing in front of the Lincoln Monument, right? Mm-hmm. But, I mean, that's just, we're now at a point in the trajectory where we should be questioning not only white men, but also white women. And if you look at the demographics of the population in terms of the vote in the presidential election, I think it has a lot to say about these demographics that we often overlook, that maybe we should take a look at. Okay, good. So, Kennedy, what are you thinking in terms of hashtag Charlottesville?
It's very interesting how there's like all this kind of backlash because during the protests, like a white woman was killed. And so, you know, we have all these demonstrations and protests from previous years, you know, Trayvon Martin, Mike Brown and Ferguson and stuff. And it's just like now all of a sudden everybody, like you said, oh, what is this, the America we're living in? You know, like what's going on? You know, this is. But I think also what's interesting, touching back on how white women play a role in racism and in these white nationalist groups, just how all these monuments are coming down, all these Confederate monuments are coming down all of a sudden, and people are really, like, pressed about that. Mm-hmm. And I saw a video that was pretty interesting that how they're taking them down and they're breaking easily because they were created during, like, the Jim Crow era and the Civil Rights era, which is pretty interesting. Mm-hmm. They were made cheaply, and then they were also, a lot of the groups that paid for these monuments were, like, women's Klan groups. So that's why
I did not know that.
Interesting.
Very interesting. Yeah, so folks are losing their minds over these monuments coming down, right?
Yeah.
Anyway, so let's move on to our next one. I think the Charlottesville hashtag allows us to kind of buttress ourselves in this space and time where we are still dealing with race and racism in this country. So the next hashtag I think is connected, which is hashtag Kaepernick, which, and you know, he's one of my favorite sports people. He's one of my favorite athletes. Not that I've ever even seen him on the field. I've never seen him catch a ball, but I think, or throw a ball. I don't know what he does. But what I do know is that he uses his platform to raise really significant questions. And of course, as an ethnomusicologist, I'm interested in how he has brought attention to this thing we call the American National Anthem. But what do you guys think about hashtag Kaepernick? Deja, where are you?
When he first took a knee during the national anthem is when I, you know, got hip to who he was. And so I did a little research about him. And what I find, well, not what I find most interesting, because there are a lot of interesting things about him, but something that I find interesting about him is that he's adopted by a white family. And having a white mother and identifying as a black woman is very sticky, and it's something that I'm still working through for myself. So I tried to find think pieces and interviews where he talks about his family, and I couldn't really find many other than him saying that, you know, my parents are very accepting of what I do and they love me and I love my parents, and it's on his Instagram. You know, my mother is the best woman in the world. Mm-hmm. But I'm interested to know what the conversations that his parents have with each other when he's not around are, because from the looks of it, they seem like, you know, the regular American white bread family, you know, like white picket fence. And his sibling, you know, they just, he looks like the oddball out in their family photos. So I'm just very interested to see what they, like, if, you know, I don't think that they would ever accept an interview request of just them, because it would be too much. It would be too political. I think you'd be able to tell how they really feel. So that's very interesting to me about Colin Kaepernick.
Cool. I hadn't really thought about that. Mm-hmm. Every time I look at him and know and remind myself of his family background, I wonder, what does it feel like to be black with a white parent? So does it turn up the volume or does it turn it down? And of course, I'm sure it differs according to who it is.
Yeah.
And knowing you.
Turns it right up. To the highest level.
I know. Which is why you're on this show.
Yes.
What about you, Deontay? What do you think of Kaepernick? Do you follow sports? Had you known of him before all of this happened?
I knew of him, but not before he started doing his protesting. So I definitely had to look him up a little bit. I knew a little bit more about him, though, than some other topics. But one thing that I saw that he said was, I am not going to stand up to show pride in a flag for a country that oppresses black people and people of color. To me, this is bigger than football, and it would be selfish on my part to look the other way. There are bodies on the street and people getting paid leave and getting away with murder. So there it is right there. He had an epiphany. He woke up one day, he was like, you know what? I'm not going to stand during this national anthem. There's nothing, I don't know, nothing anthem-y about it to him. You know, he just was not having it that day. And I saw the picture of him kneeling. I don't know if I saw the picture of him sitting. So what I read was that at first he sat down, and then the next time he kneeled because it was like a sign of, it was a little disrespectful. He had a talk with a former football NFL player and military veteran. So he had a discussion with him, I guess, and he was just like, you know, that's a little disrespectful toward us. So he decided to kneel instead of sit down. Mm-hmm. So I was like, okay, well, you know, he has some respect. But all in all, I say keep doing what you're doing. Like, he believes in something. And what I can't believe is that he isn't signed anywhere. And clearly, that's what it's because. It's not because his skill level has gone down. Mm-hmm. It's because he has decided to stand up for something that he believes in. And they're basically telling him, like, boy, shut up and sit in your place, you know? Yeah, and he's not for that.
Yeah.
And I commend him. And it has to be hard, you know? It has to be hard. It definitely has to be a struggle just living your life. But what I do like about him, though, one more thing I read is that even in the midst of all of this, he's still doing, like, his work. He might not be playing football or might not be signed anywhere, but he's still doing the work. I read that he was vowed to give my math skills. He had vowed to give a certain amount of money. It might have been.
It was like $5 million or something like that.
Something. I don't know. But it was like he gave, I think, $100,000 to 10 different communities. And I just felt like, you know, he's still holding himself accountable for helping like our community. So it's like this football thing is not wavering his decision or like his path or passion for standing up for what he believes in.
Mm-hmm. And he has that Know Your Rights campaign, which I think is phenomenal. Yeah. So, Kennedy, I know you, we did a project on that last semester, and then you wrote a really great piece on your blog about Kaepernick. So what do you think of where we are now? There was just a march in New York, I think. Mm-hmm. I stand with Cap, hashtag I stand with Cap. What are your thoughts right now on this athlete?
I don't watch football at all. I'm a basketball person. I'm not really a sports person, but when I first saw him kneel, I was just like, hey, I fully support him. And he kind of honestly inspired me to sit, like, the past couple sporting events that I've been to or wherever I have to stand for the national anthem, I don't stand because I feel the same way that he does. And I honestly think it's time that, like, black people or people in general, I don't watch football, so it wouldn't be hard for me to not watch football, but there needs to be a blackout. We don't need to support the NFL if they don't want to give him a job, if they don't want to sign him based on his opinions. You know, it's kind of like, you know, it's kind of like be quiet and play. Mm-hmm. It's like you can't have an opinion. And that's not what being a, what's the word I'm looking for? He's a role model. That's not what being a role model is about. Mm-hmm. He has the right to say what he wants to say. And, you know, there are athletes out here who have abused their wives and, you know, committed crimes and stuff, and they're still getting signed. So why isn't he signed? Because he spoke the truth.
Not to talk of the athletes that abuse their animals, but carry on. Right.
Yes. So many things stewing in my head, but something, a correlate, I think, I mean, I'm not really a sports type of person, but if I were, I know that football, especially coming to Mizzou and like knowing, like seeing people who are playing professional football up close, it's not, you know, they're on the screen anymore. Like I see them in my face, so it becomes more real. I've always made the correlation between football and modern day slavery. Mm-hmm. So I think it's very interesting, you both saying, you know, it's pretty much like them telling him, like, boy, sit down and shut up. That's exactly what overseers and slave masters mm-hmm. used to say to their slaves. Yeah. They used to say that to grown men who obviously weren't boys, you know, because words matter, as a tool to make them feel inferior. We're using your body and we're going to put you on this field, you know, the word field. We're going to put you on this field and we're going to work you to make money for us.
Right.
And I think it's also, I need to look up that number because it was a substantial amount of money. It was a lot.
That he's giving, right?
Yes. And especially with him, I mean, I know he's probably gotten a few of his endorsements cut, but, you know, he still has a little bit of money rolling in, not as nearly mm-hmm. as much as he would if he was signed and had mm-hmm. full endorsements. But the fact that he's giving that substantial amount of money to people in his community and, like, not worrying about the fact that he isn't signed anywhere speaks highly. And he's giving it to, like, Black Youth Project 100, mm-hmm. Asada's Daughters, like mm-hmm. a lot of these small, like, Black-created, women-created, women-run businesses and organizations that he feels are important.
Yeah, I mean, this is why he's one of my favorites. I just purchased a T-shirt. Oh, can't wait until it gets here. Have you seen that one with him? His afro is in the form of a fist.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. It should get here next week. I shall model it for you. But Deja, there is a book called $40 Million Slaves, mm-hmm. The Rise, Fall, and Redemption of the Black Athlete.
Can I take a picture of that?
Yes, absolutely. And this book, I think, really ties into your thoughts about how our athletes are in some ways exploited in the same ways, really disturbing ways, as slaves were, right? Okay, so we need to move on. And I think that, again, connected with Charlottesville and Kaepernick, we need to now go to hashtag reclaiming my time.
Yes. Reclaiming my time.
Isn't that what Kaepernick is doing?
Yes.
Right? Okay, so who wants to break that down? Let's start with Kennedy on this one.
You know, mm-hmm. I love Auntie Maxine. Yes. Like, yes. I was watching her on Black Girls Rock, the award show the other day. I think it was Wednesday. And I'm just like, she inspires me so much. And it was interesting that Stacey Dash, she wanted to say, you know, what'd she call her, a buffoon or something?
Oh, my goodness.
After her speech at the award show, like, if you're going to call somebody a buffoon, can you have a job? Like, get you a job. But I love Aunt Maxine.
She's just salty because the Black community does not accept her anymore for her buffoon activities. That's all it is.
Right. Stacey Dash. Yes. Mm. So I have watched that video, I don't know how many times.
The singing one?
I've seen all of them. Love it. But, you know, we laugh at it, but it's so symbolic of, I think, where we are right now. We are trying to reclaim our time. Mm-hmm. You know, in all our classes in Black Studies, we're trying to reclaim time for ourselves and for our other students who have never had the time or inclination to study us, you know. So I just love that whole meme. I love the video. I love watching her on the floor. Mm-hmm. She's unafraid. Deja?
Yes. Yeah. So, Maxine, man, I love to use the whole reclaiming my time thing in common conversation. So, I don't know if y'all saw, actually, y'all liked it, so I know you saw that status that I posted about the way that white people interact with me when they find out that I'm a Black Studies major. So my cousin, that was who I was arguing with, she tried me. I don't know if you read the comment.
Oh, that was your cousin?
That was my cousin.
Wow.
Yes, we share, her father is my mother's brother.
Okay, so give us a little snapshot of that.
Of the conversation?
Of the conversation.
Yes, so I basically was listing the reactions that I get from white people, some, you know, examples of things that they've said to me. What are you going to do with that? Or, like, Uber drivers will ask me what my major is, and then they'll just, like, stop talking. Mm-hmm. And the conversation is, it's over. And then I listed the classes that I was taking this semester, which are pretty much all Black Studies classes, if not their Women's and Gender Studies classes. And then I listed some career paths that I could take. education, which is my plan, in so many fields, activism work, policy work, museum curating, so many things that people don't bother to think about that are very real, positions that need filling. Absolutely. By people who have studied our people. Mm-hmm. And then my cousin was saying, tried to make the point, I hear you, but, which is where you should have stopped. You should have stopped after the but, because you obviously are not hearing me fully. But people would have said the same thing about creative writing. And her whole point was basically to say that not all white people are racist, and that she doesn't want me to think that all white people are racist. And so I responded with a little something like this. I said, well, it's not my job to educate white people on the ways that they're racist. I'm reclaiming my time, and I do not choose to sit them down in any capacity and try to explain myself to them or explain history to them. We have books and Google for that. How big is our library? It's large. How big is the internet? Endless.
If you have access to it, or if I have access to it, you have access
exactly.
to it.
Exactly. So we're paying the same amount of money to go right. to school, and libraries are free. So again, I say reclaiming my time. Right. There's only so much I said. There's only so much energy that I get because of the identities that I was born with and that I've acquired versus white people who get a substantial amount of energy because of their whiteness and X amount of identity. So use that energy and that time to mm-hmm. go do you and mm-hmm. study, and I'll reclaim mine and mm-hmm. sit at home yeah. and read a book too.
And lately I've been saying, you know, pick up Chance the Rapper album, you know, just listen to it, just
accessible.
Have put some candles on and learn, you know, so that mm-hmm. I can reclaim my time. Mm. Deontay.
I love Auntie Maxine.